The big question on everybody's lips.
Chap lips.
Do you think Phil's gonna come out and see a shadow?
Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right, woodchuck chuckers. It's Groundhog Day! Get up and check that hog out there!
Groundhog Day, everyone's favorite rodent-themed holiday. The first ever mention of Groundhog Day in America was in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, in 1886. Folks still gather there every year to watch if Punxsutawney Phil will see his shadow, ushering in six more weeks of winter. But here in northern Illinois, we have our own Groundhog Day destination, the city of Woodstock, the fictional version of Punxsutawney, seen in the classic film Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. As Woodstock gets ready to celebrate this weekend with their groundhog, Woodstock Willie, we thought we should stop by and learn about how this little city has embraced Groundhog Day since the release of the movie over 30 years ago. We met up with Rick Bellairs, longtime resident of Woodstock, who was an extra in the film, and now helps organize their yearly Groundhog Day festivities.
Thank you for waiting.
Tell us just how long you've been involved with this and then and how you got involved with the Groundhog Day festivities here in Woodstock.
Depends on how long a story you want. This goes back to the beginning. I was an extra in the movie. In 1992, when they came to film, I was between jobs, didn't have anything going, and I had time. And they put out an announcement, Columbia Pictures put out an announcement in town that they were looking for people for the background scenes. They needed extras. And they were going to have big crowds for the prognostication. And the thing is, when you went and talked to them about being in it, you had to be able to commit to a couple months of always being available. You couldn't say, no, I have to work on Wednesdays or I have a doctor's appointment. If they were shooting a scene you were in, we didn't know what the movie was about, but we got the gist that every day was going to be a repeat. And so if you were in a scene one time, you were going to be in it every time,
right,
and you always had to be available. And their shooting schedule was weather dependent, so each day they didn't know what scene they were going to film. So because I was between jobs, I had the time to say, yes, I'd be available. So I went to the casting call. They asked you to show up in winter attire, neutral. They didn't want any bright colors to take away from the stars of the movie. And I had a fur hat with flop down ears that I had picked up on travels, and it's winter thing. I thought that'd be good. So I was wearing that and worked as an extra in the movie. So it goes back to the beginning in 1992. Then I really didn't have much to do with it for a while, didn't get involved in Groundhog Day. Let's see, filmed in 1992, it came out in 93, and the story I've heard is that in 1994, it was like Groundhog Day, and the publisher of the local newspaper and one of the big supporters and fans of the movie who had a storefront on the square said, we should celebrate Groundhog Day. And so in 1995, they gathered a handful of people and celebrated Groundhog Day. And the next year, they had maybe a couple dozen people celebrate Groundhog Day. And a couple years later, we added a live groundhog. And then we added the mascot. And it's just grown ever since. So I became a member of the committee, served on the committee for a number of years. And then in 2016 or 17... they bumped me up to chair, so I've been kind of the lead on it for the last, whatever that is, 8 years or something.
Can we ask you about the movie? What month did they film it in? You said it looked like winter, so it wasn't winter.
It was March, April, May.
Winterish.
Yeah. I could show you some pictures where people are sitting around in shirt sleeves.
Yeah.
As it pushed on toward spring, those of us in the movie, we're wearing winter attire because it's winter scenes, and every time they were not filming, we'd like be shedding coats and getting out from under my fur hat and stuff because it was getting warm.
Which scene are you in the square?
Crowd scenes in the square. You don't see me. I was doing a really good job of blending into the background. The only time you ever see me is, and don't blink, When Bill Murray walks across the street, and it's really right in front of my office here, he's sitting on the wall, yeah, on the square, and he walks across the street to take money out of the back of the bank truck. I walk down the sidewalk in front of the bank. Oh. And it's that fast a scene. So, I mean, there are lots of people I know around town that you can see in the scenes in the diner or the dance scene in the bachelor auction and different crowd scenes. But I'm just a blink.
I never thought about this before, but because it is the theme of the movie, things happening over and over again. But as an extra, you must have done it even more times than we see it in the movie.
Oh, far, far more times.
So you did it for months, really?
It was near 3 months of filming.
Holy cow.
And yeah, at that point, I'd never worked on a movie before and didn't know what was involved. But they do a scene shooting from one direction, then they move the cameras and do a scene shooting from the other direction, and then they do the scene and somebody drops a line, or there's a technical something on the cameras, or, you know, somebody makes noise offset, and so they shoot it over and over and over again. And so the mantra would be, they would set you and tell you what they wanted you to do, and on action you start, you know, walking down the sidewalk from wherever to wherever. And so it was action, and then there would be cut, and then it was back to one, and you'd go back to the starting point to reset and do it all over again. And so it's kind of Groundhog Day like. We just kept repeating things.
Right.
When they were filming, they came to town. We didn't really know what those of us, you know, didn't know what the movie was going to be about. We were just, you know, told where to be. So in 1992, we didn't have pagers. We didn't have cell phones. There wasn't internet. And each day they hadn't decided what scene they were going to shoot the next day because, again, they were waiting on the weather. If it was bright and sunny one day or cloudy and overcast or snowing, you know, it had to, if the weather wasn't going to be what they wanted for the outdoor scene, they would go and shoot the scenes in the diner or the bed and breakfast or the bar scene. So each day they didn't know who they needed because they didn't know who was in which scenes that they were going to be working. So you would call in to a hotline number after 5 each day or something, and they'd tell you what, you know, scenes they planned on doing. And if they thought they were going to need you that day, you'd come in and be in waiting all day. And there's a lot of waiting in making of a movie. In 1992, the economy was not great. Business was, Woodstock was not thriving. Right across the street from where we are was the Tip Top Diner in the movie. That was just an empty storefront. They came in, they put in tables and chairs and made it a diner. After the moving, they took out the tables and chairs and it went back to being an empty storefront. The bar scene where Bill Murray and Andy McDowell drink to world peace had been a bar and restaurant. It had closed, but they used that bar for the bar scene. It was easy because it was closed. The building across the square from us, where the bookstore Read Between the Lines is now, was an empty storefront, and that's where the extras would go and wait to be called for their scene. So it worked for them that there was lots of empty space for them to play with.
The extras didn't get to hobnob with the stars too much?
We did not, and we were asked to like not be pestering them during the filming, and we were asked to not have cameras and be taking pictures of the stars during the whole production.
Were any of them nice? Like Annie McDowell, I bet she was pretty nice.
She was kind of standoffish. I took a couple of pictures of her. She had a daughter with her here on the set, and the groundhog that they were using in the movie had babies, and so the babies had come along with the mother for the movie, and I've got a picture somewhere of Andy McDowell and her daughter bottle feeding one of the babies.
Okay.
Was the groundhog nice?
The groundhog story has it that it bit Bill Murray a couple of times when they were in the truck and doing the don't drive angry scene. Bill was not happy when the groundhog bit him. Bill was known to be seen around town evenings in some of the drinking establishments, socializing, sometimes being friendly. Harold Ramis, I've got a picture of him here somewhere with one of his kids up on his shoulders. The part of the reason they came to Woodstock for the filming. Harold Ramis is from Chicago. Bill Murray is from Chicago. They wanted to work closer to home. I have also been told that Harold didn't think that Punxsutawney maybe was going to work for his vision of the movie. And if he did it there, he'd have to celebrate Groundhog Day their way, and he wanted to do it his way. So they started looking for places in the Chicago area. They had been scouting towns in southern Wisconsin. Punxsutawney is a Main Street town, and so they had been looking at towns with Main Street. They were in Baraboo, Wisconsin, which has a town square, and then I guess Harold started getting the idea that maybe a square could work, and they were driving back to Chicago, and Harold asked Bob Hudgens, who was the locations manager, if he had any other ideas. They hadn't found one that really clicked. And Bob told him about Woodstock. Bob had actually told Harold about Woodstock prior to searching numerous towns in Wisconsin, but that kind of went past Harold, and they kept looking. So on their way back to Chicago, Bob brought Harold Ramis to Woodstock. They went up into the bell tower in the Opera House across the square from us. He looked down on the square and said something like, "This'll work," and told his production team, "Make it happen." So they just, you know, he decided that being stuck in the square, although in the movie you never really get the sense that they're filming in a town square. And the reason Bob, I should back up, the reason Bob Hudgens knew about Woodstock and to bring Harold Ramis here is that Bob had worked on the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy and Steve Martin. So he had done some filming here and knew about Woodstock. In Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there's a brief scene. A semi-truck drives up Main Street past the movie theater that you can see the marquee in the movie. Steve Martin's standing on the corner here. John Candy opens the window in the truck, and they drive the truck up around the square, and you see the courthouse, and then they're on the road again to somewhere else.
I have to watch it. I have no idea. That's great.
You can see why they chose, you know, the square too, because it's just kind of like a picture perfect what you would imagine a small American town square looking like.
We've had people come to the Groundhog Day festivities in Woodstock and tell us that they were heading toward Punxsutawney for Groundhog Day, and then found out that the movie wasn't filmed there, and they changed plans and came here. Or we've had people say they went to the festivities in Punxsutawney, and no slight to them, they've got 150 years of history on us, but the people said they really like it here in Woodstock. I've never been, but I understand in Punxsutawney, they do the main event, the prognostication, out in a field, and it sounds like it's kind of an all-night drinking party. Here, we don't drink all night to get ready for it. We do have a pub crawl, but we don't drink all night getting ready for it. And they probably have bigger crowds, but the people, when people think of Groundhog Day, they may think of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, again, because it's been going on for 150 years. But the image in their mind is Woodstock because of the popularity of the movie. And that's what's so crazy is the movie's 30-something years old. Most movies don't have that lasting impression on people, and it just seems to get more and more popular every year. And how many movies change our lexicon? It's the phrase, you know, when something repeats, it's now a Groundhog Day event.
Yeah.
How many movies leave that kind of lasting image that changed the way we refer to something?
That's amazing, because I think people use it without even realizing that it has nothing to do with actually what Groundhog Day is.
Right. It's just things repeating.
Yeah. Wow.
Where's the curbstone that he slips on?
Right across the street, the puddle. When people come to town, one of the popular questions is, where's the puddle?
Yeah.
And so we do the walking tour around town each year as part of our festivities. Bob Hudgens, who I mentioned, the locations manager, used to be locations with Columbia Pictures. He worked with the Illinois Film Council, or however it's labeled, later relocated to Texas, but still comes back every year to lead the walking tour. And because he was here throughout the whole thing and, you know, did the negotiating with the city and negotiating with the production team and helping set everything up, he has great behind-the-scenes stories. And the crowd comes and follows him along during the walking tour. The one I like is the puddle you mentioned. He and one of the city staff would come out each morning and pull a couple of the cobblestones out of the street and pour a pitcher of water in to make it ready.
I would hope so.
And it gets better. Bob would tell you that Bill Murray might not have been the easiest person to work with.
What?
And yeah, hard to believe, I know. So if he was not behaving, Harold might make him redo that scene over and over again, stepping into a cold, icy puddle. Bob says they put his foot inside a plastic bag inside his boot, so you know he wasn't getting wet. But he had to do that scene over a few times.
Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Not a chance.
Ned! Ryerson!
What about Ned Ryerson? Does he come back here?
He's coming this year. He's been a number of times. I think it was like 2004. He was here in 2019. And then he came back in January of 2020 with Bill Murray and Brian Doyle Murray. They were filming a Jeep commercial for the Super Bowl that year was going to be played on February 2nd. So some marketing person had the idea that if the Super Bowl is on February 2nd, they should do a Groundhog Day ad. So they recreated scenes from the movie, and Bill and Steven came back to Woodstock like 2 weeks before Groundhog Day. I mean, it was a fast production put together. Great ad. I think it ran one time on the Super Bowl, and they never showed it again. So Steven was here in 2020, and he's coming back again this year. Great guy. He is so nice, so friendly. When he was here last time, after the ceremony with the groundhog, he stood out in the cold for like an hour with the fans taking selfies with him. He did a talk for us last time in the Woodstock Opera House, read a couple excerpts from a couple books he's written, and then stayed and did autographing and signing books. And yeah, he's just the nicest guy.
What's he going to be doing this time?
I've got him bouncing from thing to thing. He will be at the annual dinner dance at the Woodstock Moose. That's typically on Friday nights. And that's, again, one of the places where the movie was shot. They shot the bachelor auction and dance scene at the Woodstock Moose Lodge. So he's going to dinner there. Then he's going to see Groundhog Day, the musical, which was on Broadway and is now being done by the local theater company, Theater 121. That's going to be in the Woodstock Opera House. So he's going to see that show Friday night. Saturday morning, he is the official starter of the inaugural 5K Groundhog Day run. It's being put on by the Woodstock High School Backers Club. For years, people have suggested that we have a run, and we've kind of backed off from that. It's like February, you don't know what the weather's going to be, cold rain or icy streets or just something that we as a group didn't want to take on. And the Woodstock High School Backers Club came to us this year and said, we have an idea for doing a run. It was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Go for it. So Steven's going to be the official starter of that Saturday morning. Saturday at noon to one, he's doing a book signing meet and greet at the bookstore, Read Between the Lines, on the square. Then I think he's going to try and catch up with Bob Hudgens' walking tour and help tell some of the stories about the scene where he comes running across the street and accosts Bill Murray. Or, you know, steps in the puddle. Watch out for that first step. Then off to the Woodstock Public Library. We have a collection of things there, a display, things that were donated from Columbia Pictures, sketches of how they envisioned some of the sets to be, old newspaper clippings, lots of interesting things. So that's at the library Saturday afternoon. Then he's our special guest at the prognostication. That's 7 o'clock Sunday morning, February 2nd. He will be working with the groundhog, Woodstock Willie, to give us the prognostication. Is spring right around the corner, or do we have 6 more weeks of winter? So we've got him very busy moving from event to event this year.
You got him for the whole weekend. He doesn't just parachute in. I love that. That's great.
That he wants to leave sunny Southern California and come to cold Northern Illinois. Yeah. I'm always honored when when he says, hey, I'm available.
Do you do anything with the Sonny and Cher song as part of the festival?
It plays, it's probably playing out in the loop that's out in the square right now.
It was German polka.
Yeah. We don't do anything specific with I Got You, Babe.
You said that Woodstock was kind of a little having some hard times in 92, and there were a lot of empty storefronts. And just walking around the square now, it's not the case. It looks amazing. Everything's full. Everybody's busy. Even a Saturday morning, people are walking around. Did the movie have anything to do with that? I mean, it must have helped a little bit. Or how much did the movie help Woodstock's revival?
Come next weekend and you'll see, and the businesses, shops around the square will be thriving. It wasn't always like that. When I got involved in Groundhog Day 20, 25 years ago, whatever it was, we went to the businesses and suggested that they should be open at 7 o'clock in the morning on February 2nd. And the response 20, 25 years ago was, why? And since then, attendance at Groundhog Day has grown from, maybe it was hundreds back then, it's thousands now. There are more than a handful, probably more than 2 handfuls of stores around town that now all have their own individual Groundhog Day merchandise. And that's something I really like. We were traveling recently and it was like every store we went into had the same stuff. Here in Woodstock, it's all kind of unique and individual to the store, and lots of local artisans, crafts people make their own things. So the different stores have different Groundhog Day merchandise, and they go to town that weekend and try and make it special.
I think back to like what was demanded of the extras, and so they'd have to be local. Was everyone local?
Pretty much. There were some cast background, not background. There were some minor characters who were Chicago area, but because they wanted you here kind of on short notice and on a daily basis, I think most of the extras were local. A lot of Woodstock, but there were people from Crystal Lake and surrounding communities as well. Maybe there were some people, I think some of the suit coats, top hats in the movie, because they had sort of an acting role. They weren't background extra. They were Chicago actors.
Did you regret signing up at any point when you knew that you were going to have to dial that number at night? Like, oh, my God. Again?
No. I found it interesting to be close by and watching the making of a movie. Lots of the day was sitting around reading the newspaper or magazines and eating donuts and drinking coffee. My wife, who had a full-time teaching job at the time, was little. She was not too keen on the work I was doing.
Jealous.
I don't want to make you feel bad, but I was an extra in Color of Money, and that was only one night, and Paul Newman brought us beer. He brought a pallet full of Budweiser for us. So I'm going to say we got to treat it a little bit better.
I did one night on Hoffa with Jack Nicholson, and one day on Sleepless in Seattle, when Tom Hanks is working as an architect in Chicago before he moves to Seattle. So I did a couple other things after Groundhog Day. Your beer story, though, one story is that so when they were filming in town, people, locals, would come out and stand on street corners and watch, across the street, the making of a movie. And one day, Bill Murray went into what was then Swiss Made Bakery, one of the bakeries on the square, and bought boxes of donuts and walked out and started just handing out pastry to people in the audience. It's not your beer. It's not your beer, but
no, that's what I want to hear. I got a Groundhog Day story, not movie related. Maybe you know it since you now are in charge of a Groundhog Festival. But why do we look to the groundhog for weather future weather predictions?
I think it's like the the woolly caterpillar or something. It's old wives' tales. I don't really pay that much attention to the lore, but I guess the little I've heard is that maybe it came from a European folklore that there was, I don't even think it was a groundhog, something there, and whether it would come out of its den would indicate whether, you know, the animal thought spring was coming or not. And then that probably German roots brought that folklore to Pennsylvania, where it's been celebrated in Punxsutawney for years.
I think, unlike meteorologists, the groundhog is lucky because 6 weeks, no one ever follows up and say, were you right, were you wrong?
Well, he's always. I mean, is it ever not at least 6 more weeks?
6 weeks is on the calendar what spring is supposed to be. It's 6 weeks after February 2nd, I think, is when spring officially starts.
It's a scam.
People ask me, you know, about the groundhog's track record, and it's like, I don't know. I don't pay that much attention to it, and that's not why we're doing this.
Where is Woodstock Willie kept the rest of the year? Does he have a handler or a special, special habitat? Where's Woodstock Willie right now?
He does have a handler. Lives in, is it Round Lake? Something like that. Northern Illinois. Used to be in Chicago, but his handler moved to the northern suburbs a while ago. It's a guy who actually does animal things. He has animals for TV commercials. If they're doing shooting a scene of Chicago Fire PD, one of those scenes in Chicago, and they need an animal, he's got animals. He does kids' petting zoos. He handles all kinds of animals. In 1992, Harold Ramis set out looking for a groundhog for the movie, and the animal handlers that anybody knew of, they were like, yeah, we don't have a groundhog. And this guy in Chicago who had started this business said, I could do that. And so somehow he got a groundhog. I think back then it was maybe okay to, like, catch a groundhog. Our current groundhog handler says, you can't just go out in the wild and catch a groundhog. That's not legal. So he has gotten them through appropriate means, and he raises a groundhog. And for a while, we were told that it was a descendant of the star in the movie. I'm not sure that that family lineage still lasts, but Mark Zaffron brings a groundhog for us every year. And he, too, is a trooper. After the ceremony, he stands out in the cold because everybody wants to get their picture taken with the groundhog.
How closely does Woodstock Willie's prognostications align with Punxsutawney Phil? Is there any relation there, or do they just, like, it's completely different each year?
It is completely different. We don't look at Punxsutawney, I think, makes their announcement before ours, just because of the time change from East Coast to here. Most often, we're getting about the same weather they are, or maybe we have it first. They're usually pretty close, but it can be different. It could be cloudy here and sunny there. Ours is at a little after 7 in the morning, and the sun is only just coming over the rooftops of the buildings around the square. And so it's kind of hard to get a shadow, but sometimes they align and sometimes they're different.
Obviously, Woodstock isn't necessarily Pennsylvania. Was there anything that had to be done in Woodstock to make it look more Pennsylvania-esque as opposed to Illinois?
Good question. They did a lot of changing of things. This real estate office we're in, they put a fake facade and made it a Rexall drugstore. They had Punxsutawney police cars. Mm-hmm. In some of the scenes in the movie, I was driving my car, and, you know, cars would drive by in some of the scenes. They couldn't have Illinois license plates. So each day, if you were going to be driving in some of the movie, they gave you magnetic slap-on Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania license plates. Nobody would ever notice that, but the detail they go into is amazing. The couple of things that they didn't change on the east side of the square, there is, if you watch the movie, there is a sign that says Woodstock Jewelers. And that's, I think, the only place you see Woodstock in the movie. And I'm told they left that sort of a tip of the hat to Woodstock. Nice. Most of the storefronts, if there was something that was going to be specific, they would put a fake sign over it. Like across the square from us, where in front of the Opera House it says Opera House, they put a sign over that and it says Pennsylvanian Hotel. Because that's, Andy McDowell walks through the doors, that's supposed to be the hotel where she's staying. And then Bill Murray goes off to his bed and breakfast. So there were some changes, yeah, around town to make it be not Illinois and Woodstock. There wasn't a whole lot they had to do.
Whoever was the continuity director deserves like the lifetime award for it, because I can't imagine resetting that.
Right, and keeping the scenes, yeah, which scene and how it's, and putting the right people in the right position each time. What I always found fascinating was they came to town with a script, but then they kind of threw the script out and recreated as they went here, because they didn't, when the script was written, they didn't know there would be a bell tower for Bill Murray to do a suicide jump from. I'm not sure you'd know that there were going to be train tracks that they could drive down. I suppose most small towns are going to have a bowling alley that you can go and debate whether your glass is half full or half empty. But there were just things here in Woodstock that they just adapted for the movie.
And that's so cool that they pretty much filmed the entire movie here. It's not like they just used the exteriors. Yeah. It's they really used the whole town, it sounds like.
Yeah, so much of it was filmed within a couple blocks here. The bed and breakfast scenes, the scenes outdoor were shot there. They actually built the interior scenes of that in a set in a industrial building in Cary nearby to film those scenes. The blizzard scene where the state trooper is telling him to get off the roads, that's over by Waukegan. There's a offshoot of a highway, a ramp that works well for no traffic and doing that kind of thing. The quarry where they crash the pickup truck trying to end Groundhog Day, that's in Love's Park. And then the German restaurant where his brother, the mayor, Brian Doyle Murray, is choking. I think that was in, I've heard Elgin and I've heard Chicago, so I'm not sure about that. But other than that, it's all filmed here.
Why do people still care? 30, some, you know, 30-ish years later.
That's the big question. It's yes, the people who are coming to our festivities, a lot of them weren't even born when the movie came out, and are bringing kids who weren't born, and so, you know, is it the popularity of the movie that keeps bringing people here? I guess. I mean, it's people. We have people coming from across the country. We have people coming from other countries. We've had people from Germany and Spain and Australia and Mexico, and it's fun. So, at the Groundhog Day festivities, when I'm on the bandstand looking out on the crowd, it's early, it's a cold winter's morning, and there's a lot of smiling faces. And, you know, to bring people out and have people come for a silly event like Groundhog Day, there's enough bad news. Looking out on the smiling faces, and, you know, people create silly groundhog hats or signs to Woodstock Willie. It's a great event.
Will Woodstock Willie see his shadow this year? Will there be six more weeks of winter? You'll have to head to Woodstock this weekend to find out. You can find more info about Groundhog Days on their website, woodstockgroundhog.org. They've got a lot of events going on this weekend. Thanks so much to Rick Belairs for talking with us. You can find more episodes of Under Rocks under the podcast tab on WNIJ.org, and you can email us with suggestions of unique people, places, or events you think we should cover next. The email is rocks@niu.edu. Under Rocks is produced at WNIJ Studios by Spencer Tritt, Susan Stevens, and Dan Libman. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time on another edition of Under Rocks.